Good morning. I sort of trimmed down my title because the previous title was too long, and with my talk, we'll officially move away from parasitoids and into predators. So, in agriculture, we have the crop, and inevitably, we have the pest that damages the crop, decreasing the yield and the harvest. To control for the pest, a biocontrol practitioner would utilize the natural enemy of the pest, in this case, the biocontrol agent, that has a negative impact on the population or the foraging behavior of the pest. And through this control on the pest, the biocontrol agent has an indirect positive effect on the crop, releasing it from herbivory and increasing our yield and harvest. But this simplistic idea of a biocontrol program could go wrong if, like in most cases, in most agricultural systems, there is another biocontrol agent that not only competes with biocontrol agent 1 for the pest, but it also preys on biocontrol agent 1. So this relationship between biocontrol agent 1 and 2 that consists of both predation and competition is what we call an intra-guild predation. And one is the intra-guild predator, the other the intra-guild prey. So the simplest models of an intra-guild predation predicts that for these three components to coexist, biocontrol agent 1 or the intra-guild prey will have to be a superior competitor than biocontrol agent 2. In other words, biocontrol agent 1 will have to be much better in exploiting the pest, controlling the pest in this case. So if that is true, then the negative impact of predation from biocontrol agent 2 on biocontrol agent 1 actually prevents biocontrol agent 1 from exercising the potential maximum control on the pest. Thus, in other words, biocontrol agent 2 has an indirect positive effect on the pest, releasing it from predation from biocontrol agent 1. And this translates into a negative impact on the crop, and overall, the general theory is that intra-guild predation disrupts biocontrol. However, that may not always be the case, as was shown by a recent paper by Rudolph, in which an intra-guild predation with a self-limiting intra-guild prey, perhaps through mechanism like cannibalism or territoriality, if that self-limiting, the strength of that self-limiting mechanism is as strong or stronger than the predation impact from biocontrol agent 2, then the predation impact becomes negligible and there is no longer any indirect positive effect on the pest from biocontrol agent 2, and this results in a net positive effect on the crop. So this model of intra-guild predation of a self-limiting prey predicts that having intra-guild predation would improve biocontrol. So now we have two competing hypotheses or models of the effects of intra-guild predation on biocontrol, one that disrupts and one that improves biocontrol. And because intra-guild predation is so prevalent in most, if not all, agroecosystems, systems, it becomes important to investigate these two models thoroughly. And that is what I did in my study system, using cotton as my crop. And the two pests I studied were the two spotted spider mite, Tetranychus urticae, which is a foliage feeder and it damages plant vigor. The other pest was the plant bug, Lycus hesperus, which feeds on the cotton flower buds and fruits, and it causes abortion of those reproductive structures. The first biocontrol agent in my system is the big eye bug, Jacaris pallens. And the intra-guild predator in this case was the assassin bug, Xerus renardi. So the specific questions I asked were, how would the addition of an intra-guild predator affect the abundance of the intra-guild prey, the intermediate biocontrol agent here, and how does it affect the biocontrol of the pest, and how does it affect the crop itself? So to answer these questions, I conducted a field experiment over this past summer in Davis, using field cages with one cotton plant per cage. I had four treatments. My plant treatment had just the cotton plant in the cage, and to the herbivore treatment I added the two types of herbivores. To Jacaris treatment I added Jacaris and the herbivores, and to the Xerus treatment I added all components of my intra-guild predation system. I did a final sampling in August, so the whole experiment ran for about 2.5 months, giving enough time for the spider mites and the insects to generate multiple generations, except for the top predator, Xerus. So So I'm going to show all my, I'm going to present all my results using histograms with the vertical bars representing the mean value with standard error. And any vertical bar linked above by a red horizontal line indicate that there was no significant differences between those treatments. So on this slide, I'm showing the effects of Zealous on Jocoris, with the y-axis being the mean value of Jocoris in the cages, including eggs, nymphs, and adults. So although Zealous was a predator in the cages of Jocoris, having them in the cages did not significantly decrease the number of Jocoris. But what's more surprising is if you piece apart the population structure of Jocoris and just look at the adult females itself, after 2.5 months and with abundant food in the cages, as I'll show later, the N abundance of adult females did not differ significantly from the initial number that added into the cages, which was 2. So somehow, the population of the Jocoris adult females did not increase. And if we shift and look at the effects on the pest, neither of the biocontrol agents have had any significant control on spider mite, and thus we did not see any benefits in terms of plant dry weight to the plant. But the biocontrol effects were different for Liguus. And here we can see that although Jocoris did decrease the number of Liguus, it had some degree of control, but it was not significantly different from just the herbivore treatment only. But once we added in the intraguild predator, Zealous, the biocontrol on Liguus became significant, and this improvement in biocontrol of Liguus translated into an improvement in the flower bud retention for the plant. So, in short, the key point of the results here was that adding an intraguild predator into my system improved biocontrol of Liguus, and it translated into improvement of the cotton plant itself. So for the discussion, I would like to draw your attention to the surprising result that Jocoris numbers remain low, the adult female numbers remain low, despite, if you just look at the Jocoris only treatment, there was abundant food in terms of spider mites and Liguus inside the cages, and there were no natural enemies in those cages, but Jocoris adult females did not increase after 2.5 months. And having Zealous in the cages also did not decrease the number of Jocoris adult females from the initial number that put into the cages. So the data from this slide itself, if we fit it into the second model that I presented earlier, it seems that it fit the model really well, where Jocoris pellens is self-limiting. So after 2.5 months and with abundant food, the adult females did not increase. And because it was so self-limiting, the predation impact from Zealous was negligible, and thus we did not see any negative impact from Zealous on the abundance of Jocoris pellens. And a lot parallel to the predictions of this model, we saw an improvement in biocontrol of Liguus and an overall improvement of the cotton plant quality. So my experiment provided an empirical support for this model that was presented by Rudolph in a recent paper. So to conclude, we showed that, at least in my experiment, spider mites were not controlled by Jocoris and Zealous, and adding Zealous with Jocoris improved biocontrol of Liguus and also improved the cotton plant quality. And in contrast to the general theory of intraguild predation, which says that intraguild predation is disruptive to biocontrol, I would argue that if the intraguild prey is self-limiting, intraguild predation may be beneficial to biocontrol itself. But to reinforce these points, I will have to do much more research to investigate the possible self-limiting mechanisms in Jocoris population and to look for complementarity in the foraging behaviors of Jocoris and Zealous. And with that, there are many other people who I would like to thank, but their names are not here. But thanks a lot to these people, and thank you for your attention. Thanks. I guess I should say I can take questions now. Yes?
So
Well, was your question if was your question that Zealous preferred Zaligus over Jacoris? Well, first, I'm not exactly sure if they do prefer Ligus over Jacoris. I really can't say that. If I don't think there were any experiments that chose like a prey choice between Jacoris and Ligus for Zealous. But Ligus adults are bigger than Jacoris, and the Zealous is a sit and wait predator, so most of the time it will just be still and then you wait for the prey to come along. And Zealous hang out, well, my personal observation was that Zealous will hang out much more on the ends of the leaves where Ligus would usually be found. And Jacoris, one part of the Jacoris life history that I did not present here was that it spent a big portion of its time on the soil surface. That's the name Jacoris, right? And because of that, Zealous would have a proportionally larger predation impact on Ligus than Jacoris, because Zealous don't usually go onto the soil surface. So I hope that answers your question.